Hi, I'm Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. A signature drive has been underway to put an initiative on the November ballot in Mendocino County that will preserve our county's clean drinking water by banning fracking. One of our guests this evening is Jerry Morisky of Fort Bragg, who with many others in our county are gathering signatures for this community rights initiative. We will also be joined by longtime activist Liz Rogg of Decorah, Iowa, Winnishek County, the location of that region's first ever community rights ordinance, speaking about their attempts to stop frack sand mining. If successful, Mendocino County will be the first county in California to use the initiative process to ban fracking. Before I bring them up, I would like to play a recording of speakers David Braun, co-founder of Americans Against Fracking and grassroots coordinator of the films Gasland and Gasland 2, and Shannon Biggs, director of Community Rights Program of Global Exchange, speaking at a recent event at Town Hall in Fort Bragg. Thanks to Mendocino TV for this audio. This show has been recorded in the studios of KZYX. And we begin by listening to a song created and performed by my last month's guests, sisters Larissa and Selena, from the Goddess Alchemy Project. Listen.
Listen. Listen to the rhythms. Listen for the sounds that resound between the spaces where the beat meets the streets and the heart finds the drumming. The symphony is one tapestry and the sound becomes one rhythm, connecting every moment to this now. Listen to the cries of broken-hearted mothers and frozen-hearted fathers searching for a meeting place. Listen for the lost incantations composed beneath the surface and scripted to return. Listen to the sounds of new souls birthing and babies becoming of them. Listen for the missing ingredients. Finish the recipes just by listening to the source of your soul that is screaming to you to slow down and remember. You are divine. A blueprint of perfect information, a reflection of culminated magic on the precipice of extinction. Resurrect your breath. Listen to the heaving of your own chest breathing, leaving emotion alive in the air to resonate. Listen to the orchestration of every interconnected gesture, creating the canvas upon which we dream ourselves into being. Listen for the lyrics between the lines of the words you think you're hearing and let go. Allow yourselves to feel the flow pulsing within your veins, connecting you with every being on this planet. Your arteries are mirrored reflections of the watersheds of this earth. The ratio of water in your body is an exact replication of the ratio of water to land on this planet. Our tears are the waters of the ocean. Our wombs are filled with this same water. This water forms crystals when spoken to softly. How are you speaking? Communication, celebration, education, healing. Listen to all of these seemingly separate sounds and witness this symphony forms one tapestry. You are a weaver of this fabric that needs the harmony of we to be. You are profoundly blessed. Listen to the silent prophecies they don't want us to hear. If we are the ones we've been waiting for, why wait? We are the ones we've been waiting for. Wait no more. Listen, 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 listen.
However, this is a very different technology. Smashing bedrock with water, sand, and toxic chemicals. is entirely more invasive than sucking oil or gas out of the ground. And what we're seeing is that the mean average in fracking for water or chemicals being used, they're used anywhere from kind of 1 to 8 million gallons of water. They're using anywhere between 220 to 660,000 pounds of chemicals. Of these chemicals, what we're knowing from some analysis is that 32%, and these are, I'm sorry, let me qualify this. These are the chemicals that we can qualify. So we don't know all of the chemicals that they're using because a lot of these are proprietary secrets. Of the chemicals that we can identify, 32% cause cancer. 43% are genetic disruptors. 58% are immune suppressants. I think it's about 42 or 43% are endocrine disruptors, which are have an effect in the parts, can have an effect in the parts per trillion. So you don't really need a whole lot to get into your water supply or into other things to have them have a drastic effect on hormonal systems in the body. And so 400,000 pounds of chemicals around, it's kind of the average per frack going into the ground. And then combine that with about 10,000 to 15,000 pounds of pressure per square inch. Now it takes about 160 pounds of pressure per square inch to break a human bone. So imagine 50 times that amount of pressure with 400,000 pounds of chemicals being shot into the ground to fracture rock, to shatter rock. What could go wrong? So one of the things that goes wrong is that immediately upon drilling and fracking, 5% of the well casings fail. We know this because the industry tells us this. So those protective coatings that are supposed to, protective layer that's supposed to keep these fracking fluid out of our groundwater supplies fails. But the more we learned about it, the more we realized we had to stop it from coming into our community. That what we had seen in other communities, what we'd seen in Pennsylvania and other places, I mean, in Texas right now, they're trying to pass a ban. There, this is where it began. Nobody wants this thing except for the people that are at the top that are really making money off of it, the people that are taking money from it. So we didn't believe what these environmental advocates and other folks were telling us. We said, absolutely not. We don't want this to come into our community. And so we banded together. And we, in a very grassroots way, stopped this. And we built power in our communities. And we put pressure on the governor. And we did everything we could imaginable to stop this. Because we didn't believe that shattering bedrock with toxic chemicals is our energy future. We don't buy this. It takes a lot of money to build out the infrastructure and to do these fracking jobs. Whether we're building an oil pipeline or we're moving crude by rail, which is endangering our communities, or all the other associated infrastructure, those things cost money. And we know where we are with climate change, that the closest distance or the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So if we are at a point where our scientists are telling us that burning fossil fuels is contributing to climate change, and we need to be really concerned because, you know, the path of the Antarctic is broken off and is floating, is, you know, inevitable that this huge ice sheet is going to drop into the oceans and it's going to cause our oceans to rise. If we know that this is inevitable, if we know that our burning of fossil fuels is making these sorts of problems worse for us, then we absolutely must stop utilizing fossil fuels and take that straight line, move towards renewables, whatever it is. We found out recently that these jobs, that they are now tracing deaths that happen on some of these drill rigs to the contact that these workers have had with the chemicals. These chemicals are killing the workers. The head of the AFL-CIO just said that these are the most dangerous jobs in the country. Why on earth would we want to expand an industry that brings a toxic substance that's bad for the climate out of the ground, produces tons of toxic wastewater that is absolutely untreatable, contributes to climate change, harms our communities, poisons our water, I could go on, causes earthquakes. Why on earth would we gamble with the future of this planet, the only one we have, so that the oil industry can diversify its business and stay in business? The thing I didn't mention is that 5% of the well casings fail in the first year. But over the course of 30 years, 50% fail. And all eventually fail. But you know what these chemicals that they're utilizing? They don't biodegrade. Or if they do, it's over a long time. So those chemicals are down there to leach into our groundwater to do all sorts of things. Who knows what? There's so much we don't know. So we have a responsibility to the future of this planet. And so now is the time when we turn the fate of this world back from the ledge, back from the edge. We turn it back to sane policies.
This plan to turn that turns communities into sacrifice zones for the profit of a few, come into town rolling with hundreds and hundreds of tanker trucks that it takes to put these operations into place. Guess who pays for those city streets and that upkeep and the new noise pollution? And what happens to the local economy when suddenly there isn't even water available, and where there's threats of water contamination? There are people all across the country who can no longer get insurance or mortgages on their homes because their property value is worthless. Why? Because you live in frack land, my friend. This is what it means. It's just hard. It's a glimpse of what it means to live where fracking occurs. So when I say fracking isn't the problem, what I really mean is, how is it possible that this project can come into communities all over against community objections and they have to suck it up and take it? There's a larger problem with democracy. Mm-hmm. The work that we do, and I do in the Community Rights Program, is to actually address that larger structural problem, because fracking is a problem. I live in California. I love this state. I would live here all my life. Fracking is the worst idea I've ever heard of in the state of California in my lifetime. And yet here it is facing communities. And David and I and many other activists are going up and down the street to educate people about fracking and share the stories of communities from other places where fracking's been affected their lives, given them cancer clusters, ruined their water. To hold up a mirror to Californians and say, this could be your future unless we do something to stop it. And the work that we do at the Community Rights Program is to address that larger issue as well, which is, how come communities don't get to make the decisions about the things that directly affect them in the places where they live? Why don't you get a vote on whether or not fracking comes to town? And what can we do about this? How is it that our government agencies, like the EPA, can say, oh, fracking's so clean and so great, we don't even need to regulate it? And then at the legislative level here in California, they issue the permits for fracking, and the Constitution of the United States says, hey, fracking corporation, if you have a permit to do a legal activity as dangerous as fracking, and you want to conduct it someplace, let's say Mendocino, well, go ahead. It doesn't matter what those people say, because corporations have so-called rights that you affected citizens do not. What are we going to do about that problem? I work with communities all around the country who say, what we're going to do about that problem is we're actually going to change the structure of law in our little corner of the world. We're going to create a local living democracy. Our municipality or our county, we're going to actually rewrite the rules to say, we're the ones who decide whether or not something like fracking is going to be put down in this city. And guess what? We've heard enough bad stuff about it to know that we don't want it here. We're going to write new laws that say we have the right to decide what happens here. Our local self-governing authority is important to us. We as a community have the right to not be fracked. We're not going to wait for somebody to apply for the permit. We're actually just going to say we have assert the right to say no to fracking. And by the way, those corporate constitutional quote-unquote rights that you're clinging to, if you think that those are going to actually work here in this community, we're not going to recognize the rights of fracking corporations to frack in our community.
Local song leader, activist, homesteader, Kickapoo Homeschool Cooperative, and community builder, Liz Rogg of Decorah, Iowa, is my first guest. Welcome, Liz, to Women's Voices. And in the studio with me is Jerry Morisky from Fort Bragg, also an activist who has worked to conserve wild places and to stop GMOs and now fracking. Thanks to you, Jerry, for being here. At this point, we lost the audio, so we will be joining Liz as she is in the middle of answering my question, what part did your mother play in your becoming the activist woman that you are today?
The farm workers' rights and lacks thereof, and my mom got involved in the gay rights movement and did service in our community with Meals on Wheels and making quilts for people in faraway places and just generally being a good neighbor. She also kept lots of books and music around the house that inspired me. And, yeah, just kind of kept us exposed to the service that we need to pay as our rent for living.
Mm. Oh, that's beautiful. And you have two girls?
That's right, two daughters, ages 24 and 22.
I bet they're following in their mother's footsteps.
They are in their own generation's way, and it's really wonderful to see how they're answering that question of how it is that they'll serve the world.
Well, it's been a pleasure being on the internet and looking at your community in Decorah, Iowa. I come from Davenport, Iowa, and it was it's wonderful to see how very similar you are from us here, in terms of values and how you spend your time and loving your community and seeing it as beautiful. All of those things. It's really interesting to me. I've not ever seen such a strong connection. You know,
isn't that something? You know, and I just came from visiting California, Sonoma County, and the other one whose name I can't remember, for a couple weeks just last month, and I came home with the same feeling, going, wow, those people are up to a lot of the same stuff that we're up to here in Northeast Iowa. So
it's amazing.
It's a good thing for us to get connected in that way.
It's wonderful. Maybe bring people together all over the world. I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
You told me you were once arrested. You may have been arrested more than once, but as an activist, was this in Davenport, Iowa?
Quad Cities, Rock Island. Yeah. That was back in my early 20s, and I was just looking around at all the different ways that a young person could be of service to the world, and at that time it was a munitions factory that was there. Pardon?
The arsenal.
Yeah, it was the arsenal, yep.
Is still there, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was there was a well-organized event that happened there, and some friends and I decided to go down and get training and go through what it was, and I ended up having a choice of paying a fine or going to jail, and did go to jail for 5 days, and sure got politicized about what's going on in the prison system and how unhealthy, that's not even the strong enough word, but how
awful.
Broken it is and how much brokenness it brings into the world.
Mm.
So it was a big learning there.
Wow, so it was pretty awful.
Yeah.
Wow. And you were how old?
I think probably 22, 23,
that
somewhere
was
in there.
Very daring of you. My goodness. Have you, I guess you've probably always been an activist since that time in whatever way you can.
You know, I think when you're, it doesn't take a whole lot of exposure for a young person, a little person, a child, to see how in our everyday life we can be activists. And so, when I was 6 or 7 or something, I think I saw a picture in a newspaper of somebody with a distended belly in a faraway land, and ended up, you know, my life savings of $50 or something, sending it off to that person. It's just, you know, when I think everyone's got those impulses to do those things and to go, you know, save the woods next to your grade school that they're going to take down to build a shopping mall or whatever. It's pretty natural for kids to want to do those things. And if they just have a little bit of exposure to what's going on in the world, they can speak out in that way. I think the bravest thing I did before I became an adult was speaking up at our church council meeting, where there were 200 people coming together to talk about whether to get a new pump organ or not. And I was the only young person that spoke up, and I said, I think we should spend that money to help other people who need help instead of getting a new pump organ. And nobody spoke up to support me. And then they voted, and the pump organ was voted in. And afterwards, for years, those adults in that church came up to me and said, that was so brave what you did. I was so impressed. And my jaw just dropped. I sure learned a lot about the world and what real courage could look like, and wished that those adults had spoken up on my behalf during the meeting instead of afterwards patting my back.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Wow. Another interesting, well, many interesting things about you is that you grew up and raised your children in a house that was your great-great-grandfather's?
Our great-great-great-grandparents built the log cabin that we raised our children in, yes, here in a little beautiful valley in northeast Iowa.
Mm.
Yeah, we got lucky and found that and got to live in it and still live right here on the land with it.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
And homeschooling, have you been active in that?
Yep, we homeschooled our kids, had the good fortune to be able to do that, and have the joy of having them home with us. We aren't people who think that everyone is supposed to homeschool. We just feel like there should be choices for everybody in every community, so that if those who want to homeschool can have support for that, and those who want to do some kind of public school or other kind of school can have support to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All for choice around here.
Well, I know that you have a lot you want to say about your work, and we're all on the subject of fracking. So I give you the floor.
Okie dokes. Well, I don't know if your listeners have heard about frack sand. It's an integral part with fracking. And we live in an area here in northeast Iowa that's part of what's called the Driftless Bioregion. It's an area, a geological area that is quite beautiful and filled with rolling hills and bluffs, all of which are rich in what's called frack sand. It's silica sand, and it's actually considered, I guess, the world's gold mine in silica sand that's close to the surface. And that sand is what is used in fracking wells it's called a proppant. It's injected into the wells underground along with all those chemicals that Dave was talking about, and lots of water, trillions of gallons of water per well pad, to hold that fracture open so that the gas can escape back out. So it's an integral part with the process. And the removal of the obtaining of frack sand here in the Driftless involves basically mountaintop removal. So we're looking at here, it's like Appalachia in the 1970s. If we could go back and help that to not happen, what's happened in Appalachia, wouldn't we most certainly do that? People were trying back then. I want to honor that reality. But there's a lot of mountaintop or hilltop removal happening in our region at this point, and we're wanting it to stop. Partly, of course, because we don't want our hills taken away by trucks and injected under the earth's surface. But just as much, it's because we know that fracking must not continue, and we don't want our hillsides to have any part in that other deep devastation of the communities all over the country and all over the world where fracking is taking place.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. I have been involved in various things, as I'm sure I can't wait to hear more from Jerry about her doings. But as Jerry and you and so many people have been over all these years, in many efforts to save one thing or another, save this particular woods, this particular river, this particular building, anything. And it's been great working with people, getting to know them, honing our skills of democracy in our groups. But the fact of the matter is, often we have lost. And overall, as we all know, we have lost so much in these last 50 years, ever since supposedly our country was waking up when Rachel Carson wrote her book Silent Spring. And I was raised during the time, born in 1961, in school, I learned all about it, how we needed to save the earth, and we learned about the population explosion and civil rights movement was going on. And I was very excited as a young person to think that I got to step into a world where people had figured out that we needed to do all these good things. And yet, not until I got introduced only just over a year ago to the community rights movement did I realize and really be able to was I able to face and articulate the fact that over these decades I had gotten very disenchanted and was really just going through the motions of all these savings of things, basically so that the next generation could see that we hadn't given up, so the next generation could see that we were still trying and still honing our skills, but that I didn't really deep in my heart have a lot of faith that one or the other of these movements that I had been involved in was going to succeed, because it seemed like every time we tried, you know, the state DNR or some state preemption or someone would say, you can't do that. You don't have control. You can't say. We say, and clearly they were saying things on behalf of corporations and what their needs were in order to make more money. So back in August of 2012, I met Paul Cienfuegos at an event in Oregon, and he told me about the community rights movement, and I just felt that feeling that you get a few times in your life when you realize that you're hearing a truth that you'd known somehow all along, and you just hadn't been able to know it close enough to the surface to be able to believe it and trust it. And he explained to me how the community rights movement acknowledges that the system is deeply broken, and that as long as we're working at the edges through one particular, trying to save a one thing or another, that we will continue to fail, because corporations have been granted so many quote-unquote rights or privileges beyond those of human beings in our country, that it's the system is set up to be in their favor. And he helped me to begin to understand, and the community rights movement has helped me to begin to understand how, just as we protect the rights of children because we know that they have rights, but they aren't able to speak up for them themselves, that we must speak up for the rights of nature, which has rights but can't speak up for itself. How just as slaves in this country had rights but weren't being allowed to speak up for them themselves, weren't being heard, that people had to be brave and speak up for them. Lots and lots of people had to say, we're gonna speak up for what's right, for what's moral and what's right beyond what's legal at this point. Just as people did it during the women's suffrage movement, that we have to answer that call now in our times. And it just, you know, it's a big movement, and it's going to take time and courage, but it feels to me at this point like the only one we have left. I learned about this movement before I even knew about frac sand mining. Came back to Iowa thinking, wow, going to have to get involved in this. It's so big and so important. And then, boom, I learned about what was going on in our county newly, or what was slated to go on. And we're, at this point, we aren't the first area in the region to have a community rights-based ordinance because we don't have one at this point. We're working towards convincing our supervisors and our citizens of our county that that's the best way that we can protect ourselves. Our county is currently looking at a traditional regulatory-based ordinance with the idea that a very strict ordinance restricting frac sand mines to only here and only there and only certain amounts of dust in the air and only certain amounts of traffic and truck traffic and all that, that that's going to protect us. But the Community Rights Alliance of Winnesheik County, of which I'm a part, believes that corporate lawyers are very savvy and very practiced at looking at regulatory-based ordinances and saying, oh, you can't do that, because that's restricting our rights as a corporation to make money, and that we're likely to be sued and lose with a strong regulatory ordinance. So we're looking at this community rights-based ordinance, which I'm sure we'll talk more about in a moment, and working with our citizens to help people understand that this is the big, brave thing that we need to do if we're truly going to protect ourselves from frac sand mining and other things in the future. There's a little snapshot of what we got going on here in Northeast Iowa.
Well, it's pretty wonderful. How far in the future do you see this happening? I mean,
our county is currently under a moratorium that ends in December, but can be renewed one more time. So our supervisors are, there are five supervisors, and they are the ones that make decision. I'm trying to remember if I know in California, if you have the ballot initiative, I do believe you do, right? So you can have people, basically enough people sign something and it will become law. Anyway, maybe Jerry can answer that in a little bit. But here, we don't have ballot initiative, so it would need to be the supervisors that would pass the rights-based ordinance that we're proposing. Mm-hmm. And they, our supervisors, as far as I can tell, are very concerned about frac sand mining in our county as well. If on no other basis, at the very least, they're concerned about our roads and bridges and our windy, twisting roads and our many, many bridges over the rivers and creeks and the amount of road damage that would be caused by these frac sand trucks, which one of which has the impact on a road of 9,000 cars driving on the road. So, you know, who's going to pay for the road damage and the bridge damage? Our supervisors are very concerned about that. But also, so many people, including myself up to a year and a half ago, are operating under the old belief that we can't stop somebody from making money. That's you draw the line there. It somehow feels like a lot of people even think it's immoral to keep somebody from making money when they could otherwise make money.
Jeez.
We're trying to convince, help ourselves and our neighbors and our community understand that the number one thing is that we need to protect the people, the land, the air, and the water. And it's amazing how important, how necessary that discussion is over and over again to have. Because we say in the community rights movement that our own minds have been colonized. We've come to believe things that we never, as young people, would have believed was possible in this country. We now come to think of it as matter of fact that, well, of course the corporation is going to have to come in and do a certain amount of polluting. Of course this and of course that. But it's time to reconsider all that. So anyway, we'll see. We would love the ordinance to be passed before the end of December, but I think we're going to have more time than that in order to get it passed because of the extension of the moratorium.
So that's helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think I'll bring up Jerry, and then we can have a conversation.
Wonderful.
In the studio with me is Jerry Moritzky. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Janie and Liz.
Hello, Jerry.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the question. What part did your mother play in your becoming the wonderful woman that you are, Jerry?
Well, my mother was pretty shy about public things, but our house was always the warmest, most gracious host. She was a hostess par excellence. So we always had huge gatherings all the time, and people always knew that there would be loving food and a loving presence. So my mother provided that. And then I had the gift in my life of about 20 amazing women who were in their 80s and 90s from Ojai area, who were all involved with Krishnamurti and Paramahansa Yogananda, and they did work in the prisons. They were doing some of the earliest transformational work. They were artists, writers, poets, and to see women in their 80s and 90s with such passionate commitment to helping this planet and helping every single person have a right to a dignified life, you know, whether they were working in the prisons, working in the schools, and the passion to see every child start life protected from damage, you know, so that they'd have their creative blossom always. And so those kinds of people and ideas, and they were still dancing in their 80s, you know, in their 90s. So it was a wonderful role model for me about what aging can look like, you know, that service doesn't stop when we retire, you know, there's no such thing. So it was great to see the longevity of their service and the joy of their service. And I guess, too, to know that service brings joy, and I think that was one of the biggest lessons.
Well, you are also the mother of two daughters.
Yes, I am.
And they're a little bit older than Liz's.
Yeah, one is, I think one is now 32, and the other is in her 40s. And so, yes.
And you're a grandmother.
And I'm a grandmother. I have two absolutely energy-driven young grandsons.
I mean, you've done a number of things in your life. How did you get from there to here?
Oh, wow. For me, life seemed to often just place me in all the places I didn't think I wanted to be. You know, we have ideas. I was at the university at Berkeley, and of course that was in the 60s. So I was surrounded by all the wonderful new stuff. We were looking at Sierra Club and Cousteau Society and sustainability and dome building and back to the land and all of this. And instead, the universe popped me. First, my husband had a four-year naval scholarship, so we suddenly were plunged into the military during the Vietnam War. Then I came back and ended up working for corporate lawyers and worked for actually some pretty enlightened CEOs, a Korean ambassador in an art center, and I also ended up working for an award-winning planning director. That was a good loop because it really reminded me how difficult it is to sustain sustainability through planning and zoning laws. You know, they're there, but they're overridden, as Liz said. Almost everything at the county and local level is overridden by state and federal preemption laws, as well as the constitutional laws that are used on behalf of corporations. So all of that. And then I got plunged into ExxonMobil and Chase Bank. So I really got to see the corporate side of things and made me even more passionate about working for our communities to see that just wonderful human beings are inside of corporations working away, you know, getting their kids through college and putting gas in our tanks. But at the corporate top boardroom level, which is where Liz too is, they're the ones making rules about our communities. And since they don't have to live there, they will do whatever they wish. And they have all of the corporate legal staffs and all the court, as well as the constitutional laws. They use the Commerce Clause and the Contracts Clause to put basically corporate rights over people's rights. Mm-hmm. So all of that was a good journey.
I guess so. It prepared you for what you're doing now, and you have been going out and collecting signatures. Tell us about that process, because we need signatures to put this fracking on the ballot.
Right. And basically, as a community, we've all been looking at not just fracking, but, you know, there's big companies like Geyser that want to come in and take our water. We're under, you know, a drought, almost going to head to a drought four stage, and yet we're looking at some of the highest water use is fracking and also taking water for other purposes. So we looked at a whole bunch of options through all different organizations that we have. We have wonderful organizations here in Mendocino and a tremendously awake and passionate community. So we're very lucky that way. and we explored a lot of options. So we are working on a moratorium, but that's only a stopgap measure. And measures that are put through at the Board of Supervisors levels, they can be taken away by the next Board of Supervisors who may not agree. So yes, Liz, we do have the right in our state to have citizen-enacted measures. So we have the right to take a community rights ordinance and get it passed in our county. So that's what we're working on right now. And basically, it gives the county residents a right to local self-government and a right to clean water, air, and soil, and the right for freedom from pollution, and the rights of natural communities and ecosystems. And it actually uses the legal process of a community bill of rights ordinance, which upholds the rights of our local town and governments to decide what we want in our communities. So it's a very powerful tool, and it's way more powerful than regulatory. Regulatory agencies, as you know, are pretty much created by the oil and gas industry, by whoever, and then they pretty much decide what rules will be in effect. And once something is allowed, the regulations are always in favor of the corporations and corporate lawyers. They're never in favor of the community. So basically, we are at the point where we have one more week. Basically, we have through June 25th to gather the rest of the signatures in order for this to get on the ballot in November to prevent fracking and misuse of our water, soil, and air. Sacramento is pretty much going ahead in January, full bore, so to speak, with fracking and all of the truck traffic and all of the total destruction of our water. Basically, we're looking at giving up our most precious resource, water, in exchange for an oil and gas agenda. So if we can get this ordinance on the ballot, which we're very close to being able to do that, but we are going to be asking our local citizens to be registered and to please sign our ordinance signature. Once we get the right number of signatures, we'll be able to get it on the ballot in November. And that's a pretty exciting possibility.
When is the cutoff time for collecting the signatures?
The county has said the cutoff time is June 26th, and we'd like to have them all in by the 25th so we can do a quick validation ourselves to make sure these are all valid signatures. Some people haven't really registered. They're not registered with the county, and the county will cross-check all the signatures to match signatures as well as whether people have valid registrations on file with the county's registrar's office. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we basically would like to get another round of valid signatures by that June 25th date.
And so how are you going about that?
Well, we have the most wonderful group of volunteers who've been out there in the heat and the wind and the fog collecting signatures, usually in front of the post offices. They've been in front of Harvest down in Mendocino. So the best way right now, though, if you want to help with signatures, we really could use that as well, is to call Carrie Durkee. She's been in charge of signature gathering in our area, and that's 937-2554. That's Carrie Durkee, 937-2554. And she can either steer you to where you can sign up and get registered, or if you're willing to help, we'd love to have more volunteers gathering signatures. And mm-hmm. It can even be a signature tree in your neighborhood. You don't necessarily have to stand out in front of some place.
Okay. Liz, is there something you'd like to add to all this?
Oh, geez, it's just so exciting to hear about that work out there. I'm so excited for you guys, and with your deadline coming up soon and feeling close to it and having all those volunteers, it's just makes me very happy to hear about.
Way to go. That's great. Jerry, you are going to be doing something else, looking at all of this from another viewpoint, and that's going to be happening on the 22nd. Would you like to speak about that?
And I'm sure Liz is also working on these things in your community and actually all across America. You know, there's over 160 community rights ordinances in place already, and the network is growing. And one of the things that will be required is our ability to handle democratic process and self-governance. And as Liz mentioned, one of the biggest challenges is how colonized we really are. You know, the 1% controls 99% because they've been effective for centuries, not just years. I used to say we were outfoxed long before Fox News came along, but the media control, the way our textbooks are framed, the way children are exposed to the world through our educational system, and especially the media. Noam Chomsky has done beautiful work. And one of the things we'll be exploring together as a community on June 22nd at 4:30, and we certainly invite everyone to come because it's really a time where we're going to explore just how colonized we are and what challenges that takes in our ability to communicate with each other, our ability to have conflict resolution. We have so many patterns in place that the divide and conquer has been working really well. And one of the beautiful things about community rights is it's really beyond politics as we know it. And we certainly need, if we're going to solve problems, to move beyond politics as we know it. So it's beyond being a Republican, a Democrat, a Tea Party, a Progressive, a Libertarian, a Green Party. It's about when we go to the tap, we want to be able to turn on water for our children and our families and our grandchildren and our animals and our farms. And that's just one issue among many. But in order to solve all the horrific social and economic problems we're all facing, to come together as a community, and as Liz mentioned, building a strong community is a lot of work. You know, we really have to find new tools of compassionate communication, and we really have to put what we want to achieve as a community ahead of all the, what I call them, personality bumps and all the things that people run into when they're working in a group. And so finding ways for groups to find harmony and commitment and intention and tools of transformation, you know, this is an evolutionary process. So community rights as a national process and as a local process is really about all of us helping to transform ourselves and transform our communities into a collective that really is working as a cooperative effort on behalf of what we want for our future, what we want for our kids and our grandkids, and what we want for our farms and our families. So in order to get there, June 22nd, we're going to start exploring just how colonized we really are. And it's going to be mostly interactive with our community. So everyone who comes will be part of the problem solving and also part of the conversation. So we're really looking forward to everyone showing up for that because it's going to be a way to start building our community together in a profound way.
And again, that's where and when?
Okay, that's going to be June 22nd, and it's going to start at 4:30, and we will provide snacks. And it's going to be at the Mendocino Community Center, which is on School Street there in Mendocino. So it's a pretty central location. Mm-hmm. And we really hope everyone will come and bring their voice and their ideas and their problem-solving tools.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to interrupt and say, this is KZYX. You're listening to Women's Voices. And we are discussing fracking with Jure Moreski and Liz Rogg. I have a terrible frog in my throat suddenly. It feels as if there's a sacred element to all of this. I'd like you both to respond to that, to this movement, to this new way of thinking.
Hi, this is Liz. I'm glad that you asked that question because I've been thinking, it's so wonderful listening to you, Jure, describe all the multifaceted aspects of this work with the tools for transformation and I don't know to what extent it is inherently the community rights movement or if it is these times that we're living in that are just calling forth the best and the most that we have. But my experience in community rights work here in Winnishee County, where I live, is that we are feeling called and empowered to go beyond getting together and having a meeting and sitting and just talking and working hard. We're also including song and conflict transformation training, practicing communication skills, tending to each other's hearts. We're doing these in our own halting, bumbling ways, but we're calling it a valid use of our time because we know that we will burn out if all we're doing is the furrowed brow aspect of things. And we've all been around long enough. You know, we're, our group is various ages from 21 to 65, I believe. But collectively, we've been around long enough to have some ideas of other of these tools for transformation, and we know that the time is now to be using them. So that would be my answer to the question about the spiritual aspect to this work, that we include the arts and inspiration and poetry and our caring open hearts and our vulnerabilities in the ways that we work.
Mm, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Terry, your turn.
Well, Liz, you gave me goosebumps because that was so beautifully stated, and I think it's what we all share, that it's a time to return to story and song and poetry. And those are our creative gifts that empower us at levels way beyond, as you said, just dialogue or sitting at meetings and all that stuff, the furrowed brow approach. Because without joy and without song and without story, and people have once said, without our stories, we people get lost. And I guess I'd add one last thing from Derek Jensen, who was such an inspiration. He said, why do we do this when we could be so hopeless and just give up? And he said, because I'm in love. And we say, because we're in love with the salmon and the forest, and we're in love with our kids and our communities. And love is really what it's about.
Indeed. Well, what's next? Do you have anything you'd like to? We have a few minutes, so this is your time, either one of you, that you would like to add to this conversation we're having.
Well, Liz, go ahead, because I'd love to hear more about your community. And go ahead.
Well, maybe the thing I would like to do, and just take a part of a minute, is since we just talked about song, just sing a quick little song that was written by Tom Hunter that speaks to this work, and it just goes like this. May the work we do make the world we live in a little more worthy of our children. May the work we do make the world we live in a little more worthy of our children.
Oh, it's yes. Beautiful. Very touching. You lead song. You do lead community singing, don't you?
I am one of many emerging community song leaders in our community, in our country, yes. Bringing up the songs that are the soundscape of our time to sing forth the new world.
Lovely.
The idea being that when we twine our voices in song, we connect ourselves to each other and to the earth and the sky in a very important and powerful way.
Beyond words.
Beyond words. And drumming, we're also looking at drumming circles because the drumming always brings hearts together and a shared drum beat.
Oh, Jerry, I wish I were your next door neighbor.
I'm looking forward to inviting you out to join us. I'm even going to have a guest room, especially for all our Community Rights Network.
Well, I have a daughter that's going to school in Sonoma County these days, so I might just get to meet you.
Oh, and we're also looking at starting, you know, Sonoma and Napa and Lake Counties are all excited about what we're doing and want us to start helping them get started. So
yeah.
We're wanting to go statewide. Well, you know, and we're back to the future. We're going back to the beginning of our Constitution, and we as a people are doing a back to the future about we the people.
Yeah. It's so exciting, isn't it, to be part of a movement that is spreading so fast? People just have to hear about it once before they go, that's what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to join and be part of it. We, too, are part of a growing network out here in the Driftless region. do know that in Colorado there's a statewide initiative now to pass a statewide rights-based ordinance having to do with fracking. So yeah, it's really getting big fast.
It is, and you know what? We're at the end of our time, so I need to come to a close. Thank you so much, Liz. It's been wonderful having you.
Thank you, Tina.
Yes, lovely. And we'll see you in California for sure.
Right.
And Jerry, thank you too. I've appreciated your contribution. It's been wonderful being with you. Thank you both very, very much.
Bye-bye.
Listen to the rhythms. Listen for the sounds that resound between the spaces where the beat meets the streets and the heart finds the drumming. The symphony is one tapestry and the sound becomes...